Today is Thursday, March 10th. We're back in the studio. This is Diamonds in the Rough with Cole Wilcox, my co-host Nick Schnell. And we just recorded a sick interview. Kind of still pumped up after it.
Yeah, feeling, electric.
You feeling energized?
Yeah, I am. I mean, he was so sick. Had a bunch of really, really, really good information.
Yeah.
It's always nice to talk to a guy who's kind of been through it and see what he's got to say, because they always got a bunch of good nuggets.
Yeah. A-plus dude for sure. You got any free ad reads today or no?
No. But if you're a company out there and you want – I'm just kidding.
Free Wilson ad. Got some dirty new pieces. It's time to go.
I guess I can give a free ad to Iron Flask. If you want your water to stay cold,
what the heck was
get yourself
that?
An iron flask.
I don't know what I just dropped, but it sounded like a bomb went off. Back there? I think it's candles. I think it's these giant candles that came in my room.
Nice.
Anyway, let's get into it. Headed down to the neon lights, it's where I want to be,
because I'm just trying to make it. You're listening to the Diamonds in the Rough podcast. Powered by Prospects Live.
Well, we're back here, still in Florida. Spring training has officially started. We're in full ramp-up mode. Shelly, how's it going?
Well, you know, it's been better, but got an MRI tomorrow. Got to go to the doc. Shoulder's been acting up on me again, so been shut down again, which really stinks, but – you know, when you sign up to play baseball, sometimes this is what you sign up for, and it's just another part of the journey for me. So we'll see how it goes tomorrow and go from there. But
it is what you sign up for.
Yep, exactly.
There's absolutely nothing you can do when you're hurt either, and that's what sucks. You're just freaking helpless.
Yeah. I mean, I knew something was wrong when I was one-hopping my partner when we were at 90 feet throwing and just – wasn't coming out good. I kept trying to tell myself it was just soreness from the past injury, but that was not the case. How's your progression going though, man?
It's getting there. Still feeling good. The hardest part is just not pushing the gas too hard. Just kind of pulling back. Now I got a while. Don't try to overdo it. So that's what I've been doing now. But it has been cool to see some of the guys that we rehab with last year started to get healthy and throw live again.
Yeah.
Good to see us rehab warriors get back out there.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
They survived the grind.
I think it's hilarious that we sit here and ask how each other are doing just so we can say it on the pod, because we literally talk every single day.
Yeah.
We know exactly what each other are doing at all times pretty much. And we're just like, hey, man, like, how you feeling? Just to give the update on the pod.
Yeah, this is probably everybody's least favorite part too. So yeah, we could probably just completely chop it. But we did release a video yesterday that was quite comical, in my opinion. Yeah. I watched it like four times. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, I think it's funny every time.
So yeah, at this point, me and Shadell are like brothers. We're partners a lot in these games that we play. This game is called 13. It's a card game, best of seven. Listen, I'd already won some money. I was chilling. I was good to go. And Schnell, he's like, you know, best of seven, $20. Let's roll. Let's do it. I'm like, all right, whatever. I'm in. So we're down 3-2. And so the fireworks start a little bit. You'd have to understand the game to know what the fireworks were about. But it was quite comedy. Shout out to John Doxakis for the camera work to have it on.
Well, technically, we were down 3-1, and then it happened, and then we got down 3-2 because of what I did. No, we were up 3-1, and then we lost.
No. It was 2-2 at the top. We were down 3-2. We won the last two games.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And that's what we do. 3-2. That's what we did. We just need to get that out, and then it was on. I mean, we just straight dominated. So.
But if you watch the full clip at the end, you'll see us – dominate them, and then I ask him to send their money in any form possible. I told him I take PayPal,
take it all, baby.
Venmo. I don't know if I said.
Well, don't discriminate. Just give it.
I said
to
you can hand me cash for all I care, but I want my $20.
Oh man, yeah, that's fun. Good stuff. Good video work. Speaking of good video,
that's what spring training is, though. That's what spring training is. You go to the field, you come home, you relax for like a couple hours, and then
your competitive juices start kicking in.
And then the boys get together, and then it's games.
You can't just chill all day. You got to compete at something.
Yeah.
You're all sitting around. Gonna play some cards.
Yeah.
Like, all right, yeah. Let's
play
do
some Catan.
Play some darts.
Let's play some darts. Yeah.
Mario Kart. Anything. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it don't matter. You
flip coins out in the backyard. Speaking of expert camera work, though, we have some really cool videos coming out. And like we mentioned, we're exposing that fraud David Rush right now.
Yeah.
A long time ago, well, relative to this pod, it was probably like November, but Schnell, for I think it was slumping streaking.
Yeah, I can't remember.
I think David,
I still have he found no David idea Rush, how he came up.
Found David Rush. This dude has 200 plus world records or something ridiculous like that. And if you go look him up, the reason he has these world records is because no one has tried to beat him. Like that's what it boils down to. He does stuff that no one has tried to beat. And now, don't get me wrong, the dude has some serious talent.
I was going to say,
he can juggle anything.
As much as he does, yeah, he has some talent. But there's a couple, like some of them are legit world records. Like, I don't think some, like, it would take some people a lot of tries to do. Mm-hmm. But there's also a couple in there where it's like, all right, man, like, give me 30 minutes. Give me 30 minutes. Let me stretch my back out real quick.
So, yeah, one of them was 100 meter blindfolded. And he did it in 14:22. And he said the key was, like, the stipulations of this world record was you have to stay within the lines of a track and you have to be blindfolded. Well, if you watch his YouTube video, within the first three steps, he steps out twice. But I guess those got waived and it counted. But it was 14:22, and Schnell's like, I can beat that for sure. And at this point, I was a little less confident that he could beat it because he had said he swore up and down that he could beat his record of blindfold juggling, which was 32 minutes. I said, there's no chance. I don't think you can do it for a minute. He throws the blindfold on, and he doesn't catch two balls. Like, not even close. And he comes off, he takes the blindfold off, and he says, dude, you can't see anything. Yeah, that's the point. So this was after that when he's like, oh, I can for sure beat that one. And I'm like, dude, I don't know. Like, you just were really confident you could beat this one. I was like, screw it. Let's try it out. Wore it out. I mean, he straight up dominated it.
Yeah.
We'll have a video hopefully this week. It'll be out this week. And he broke it twice. Like, he did one warm-up run, 15
seconds.
And
the warm-up run was like, I went down to one end of the track, and then I ran the 100 meters. And by run, I mean, like, I jogged it in probably like 16 or 17 seconds just to get a feel for how long it was.
Yeah.
And then no stretch, nothing. Threw the blindfold on. I run the first one, and I have Samp in there helping me out, and he's like, hey, a little bit to your right, a little bit to your left, like if I got a little wobbly. So on the first one, he was like, I get about probably 50 meters, and he's like, a little to your right, a little to your right. So I straighten out, and I get it, and Wilcox is trying to get the video and doesn't stop the timer in time.
And so I was holding two phones.
So we had to redo it, obviously. I was holding the timer
and the video. And I don't know why I didn't just go to the finish line. I guess I just didn't expect you to go as fast as you. I don't know what I was thinking. And so you're starting to get to me. I'm starting to back pedal real fast. And instead of stopping the stopwatch when you cross, I stopped the video. And the stopwatch is still running. I'm like, oh. And I when I looked at the stopwatch, I knew you had it beat. And I was like, dang, you just beat this. And I jacked it up. I was like, we're going to have to do it again.
And then I go – and so I ran that one in what, 13 – something
12:8,
and then I go and I do it again.
Well, no, okay, yeah, the first one it would have been around 13, yeah,
13 something, and then the second one they didn't even have to tell me, like, hey, little right, little
left.
It
was incredible.
I was money in the center of the line, and I was just hauling.
It was like Forrest Gump.
And when you watch the video, the best part is I have no idea where the finish line is. And so I'm sprinting through through the finish line, and I'm still going, and all of a sudden I just hear cheering. And so I stop because I was like, I have to run the 100 meters. They're going crazy. And so I finally realized, okay, I finished. I would have ran right through the fence.
Yeah.
Nobody was going to tell me that. I didn't think about that.
I just wanted to hear the time. That was funny because I was the one running behind you. And you can see my point of view. I'm freaking stomping like a Clydesdale falling behind you trying to hold this video. I didn't have to tell him one time. He straight up ran a straight line blindfolded. And I didn't try it. I didn't want to try it because I don't possess that type of athleticism. But that was actually the most impressive part of it. And then we pulled a major David Rush and just made up our own record and waxed it.
And I got back at Cole for messing up the video because I definitely – we got one and I messed up the video on that one too. I stopped the video and I stopped them both for some reason.
Yeah.
But
we're two world record holders. I mean, that's two. We were
technically three. Technically three, because the next day I hit a ball 124.8, and that's the hardest ball ever recorded.
Wow.
On
and that's completely legit. You can't deny that.
It was not a mystery. My second hardest ball hit was not 101. And then I jumped to 124. It was a legit read. I hit it 124 miles per hour. It set it on the TV in the cages.
Yeah, you can't argue.
The machine said it, not me.
We played at Georgia Southern my freshman year, and they had a hot zone in their radar gun, and it was like almost in the dirt. Like if you threw a ball in the dirt, it'd read 98. And we had a guy, he threw a changeup, and it read like 98.4. And to this day, if somebody asked him how hard he throws, he'd say 98.
That was like me in fall ball. I always had a decent arm when I pitched. Like I would sit like 91, 93, like maybe touch a four. And in fall ball, I hadn't thrown forever. And I'm back there and I'm sitting like 91, 93. And then all of a sudden I hit 94. And the next pitch I hit 96. And then I go right back down to 91. Like, I went 96 to 91.
So, you throw 96.
Yeah, I throw 96 for the rest of my life. Yeah. If anybody asks, I'm like, dude, yeah, I ran up to six multiple times.
Ask them. They were there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the best. The summer ball juice guns. At freaking late point, you're throwing 99 every time you hit the mound.
Yep.
Hey, it makes you throw better. I know that for a fact.
Your confidence for a fact, is through the roof.
If you're looking up and you're bumping nines, you're going to throw better that game.
Although the day I hit the six, I kind of got hit around a bit. But
yeah. Probably you're confused on why you went back down went back to 91.
Well, I didn't know at the time. I came in the dugout and they're like,
oh, well, you didn't 96. See it. See, that's different. You have to see it.
You hit 96. And I was like, no, I didn't. Yeah, you did. it was Jack Perkins, one of my good buddies. And he was like, I don't know if it was a misread or not because the next pitch was 91. But he was like, the gun did say 96, but I don't believe it.
There's those people that's growing up where you go out. I mean, I go out and get shelled and come back in. I'm just like pissed off. I'm like a sophomore in high school. And somebody comes to me, he's like, dude, you hit 92. Yeah. I'm like, I don't care. Get out of my face. I'm like, what do you mean? You hit 92? Who cares? Like, that's. I love how some people's like, it's velo all. Which, I mean, it's cool.
Like, it's always good to have one of those friends, though, who's like, Dad, you're going to have to call back later. who will sorry, I just thought about the blooper during our world record. My dad called.
Yeah, your dad called.
And I was like, screw him. We're trying to break a world record. Sorry. But you have that friend who you'll be playing bad and he always knows how to like cheer you up. Like he'll come say something like real dumb and you're just like you're
unintentionally,
so mad.
Though.
Yeah, you're so mad that you don't want to laugh, but then you just realize you're an idiot. Like I'm gonna laugh and this is funny.
It's just a game.
Yeah.
Now that speaking of what Chanel's referring to is I had a tripod set up with my phone on it and just constantly rolling while we're trying to break this next record we made up. Which essentially is a 54-yard shuttle while volleying a ball with giant badminton rackets. I mean, it took us 2 hours.
Yeah.
I was dying.
The 100 meters took us literally 10 minutes, and then we sat out there for
It only took us 10 minutes because I jacked up the first run. It would have taken us – you literally just rolled out there and did it. And, we were out there for a long time.
But that one, I mean, I was a part. I didn't actually break the world record because I got so tired. I was like, Samp, I need you to come tap me in.
Yeah. It was me and Samp that broke the second one. So we're all three world record holders.
Yeah. And so I was dead tired. But you guys were grinding. We were grinding for that one. It was not easy. If somebody else did it, it will not take – you will think, hey, yeah, I can do this. It will take you much longer than what you think.
Yeah.
And if anybody would try and go beat it, we'll just dominate it again.
Yeah. So, it's a free invitation to go beat it, 100%. Yeah.
Same with the 100-meter blindfolded. I was literally walking. So
you think you could shatter that?
Yeah, 100%.
Love it.
If you gave me a full stretch, full dynamic stretch, I would have ran. I might have beat my unblindfolded 100-meter dash record.
That'd be something. Before you start running bases, just throw a blindfold on you to increase your speed.
Yeah.
But anyway, the tripod footage that I have set up is absolutely the best footage. I don't even know how to incorporate it in this video, but we're going to have to figure it out.
We'll find a way. There'll be some bleeped out words, and there was some good stuff in there.
It was a grind. I destroyed my shoe. Yeah, we'll get it out. We'll get it out.
That was the best one, actually, the shoe.
Anyway, let's get over to streaking slopping, because I got a dirty streaking. And I'll start. Shout out to the UTC Mocs, University of Tennessee in Chattanooga. They are going dancing. They won their conference tournament this week in one of the best basketball games that I've watched in a while. I mean, they went to overtime, trading threes. They hit a full or half court runner to win. It was awesome. And that's, you know, we're without Shook today, but I know Shook was fired up. The voice of the Mocs himself. And they're going to be a dangerous team come tournament time. I can't wait. And they might match up with Illinois, I saw in a mock tournament the other day. Yeah, that'd be wild.
That would be nuts. Well, to go along with that, my streaking is the Illini. They won the Big Ten tournament. They're the one seed in the Big Ten tournament, which I love because if any Power Five conference fan, like if you have a team, you want your team to win the conference outright, so they don't have to, like, you don't want them to win the conference tournament, because Illinois last year didn't win it outright, and so we all were like, yeah, we want Illinois to win the Big Ten tournament, and then they get to the Big Ten tournament, they win. It's hard to win a Big Ten tournament or a conference tournament and then go win the national championship, so you want to win it outright, win one game in the tournament, lose, and then you go in and set a fresh streak in the tournament. And that's just how you have to do it. But they're my streaking. Love the Illini. Kofi, I will say Kofi got screwed, dude. He was like first in points. In like the categories, he was like first, second. And they gave the Big Ten Player of the Year to Johnny Davis, which whatever committee that is, they're slumping. That will be my slumping because they're slumping hard.
What are we going to do for the Chattanooga versus Illinois first round matchup? That'd be something.
Are you asking me? I'm cheering for Illinois.
Well, yeah, to beat them by 40. We'll have to do something though.
Yeah, we'll maybe live stream us watching it.
Maybe.
You can put your mock stuff on, and I'll put my Illini gear on. And
I'm trying to look up who's the last team to win their final or their conference tournament and the finals. I'm not seeing it though.
Yeah, because it doesn't happen. It's impossible.
Conversation. Yeah, so I'll go on my slumping real quick. I tweeted out the other day, and this is funny. This is the guy who kind of slumps a lot. John Heyman. He's today's slumper. He had tweeted some. I'm trying to find it right now. He's tweeted. Okay, I got it. John Heyman. He tweeted huge day in baseball. Deadline number three. MLB. Blah blah blah. He's talking about the third deadline and Mitch Garver. Commented or quoted it and was like, huge day, John. Make sure to let us know how disappointed the owners are about missing games. Just sarcastic tweet. Well, John Heyman comments like he's just some random dude. And his name's Garf Sauce on Twitter. He says, maybe I'm naive, Garf Sauce, but I believe everyone wants to play. And then he goes on and on, just kind of like coming at him in a derogatory term. And turns out he's talking to Mitch Garver. So Shout out John Heyman. I mean, that's no feel of the word of the week, and you slump it.
Also, another slumping, Calvin Ridley. Don't bet on your own sport. You're an idiot.
We're not going to talk about Calvin Ridley.
Sorry, I had to bring it up.
We're not talking
about I mean, dude, there are so many other sports to bet on. Just don't.
So many.
I mean, Cole and I could have turned you on to the horses.
Yeah.
That is electric.
We could have got you on horses.
If you love gambling on sports, we could have turned you on to the horses. Hasty Lady will win every race that she races in.
Listen, everybody loves to throw five, $10 down with your buddy on a game. I mean, it's awesome. It gets you – every red-blooded American deep, deep down likes to gamble. Whether it's money or something else, you like to gamble.
Yep.
You know, you play – hey, whoever loses this game has to jump in the lake. Everyone loves to gamble. Have you ever gambled on MLB?
Nope, never.
Have I ever gambled on MLB? No. Nope. So I don't – whatever. Yeah. Enough of that.
I just don't understand it. It's like the one rule. Like, it's the – when you are a professional athlete, you can't bet on your own sport. And it's very simple. Like, they tell you, hey, you can't do this.
I'll tell you what the biggest crime of it was the fact that he bet on the Falcons to win. If you
– you know
if,
what the biggest crime was?
Him no. If you bet on the Falcons to win, you deserve jail time. I don't care who you are. That's a terrible bet. I can promise you, if you want to bet on the Falcons to win, I will be your bookie. Just tweeting after,
I bet you $1,500 I don't have a gambling problem.
He said he only bet $1,500. That's what he said. Said he only bet $1,500. He don't have a gambling problem. The tweets afterward, just like every tweet he sent, which is like another knife in my heart. Like, please shut up. Please.
Colts got rid of Carson Wentz. Streaking.
If they get Matt Ryan.
I will –
first, I'm going to cry a little bit, and then I'll be real pumped up.
Yeah.
That'll be awesome.
I mean, I want to get Matt Ryan severely bad. I feel like it's going to be Matt Ryan or Jimmy G, but –
it'll be Derek Carr.
Right, yeah, I would be okay with Derek Carr
too. Yeah, for sure. Dude's a baller. Yeah. All right, anyway, you got another slumping, or is that yours?
I mean, I had two streaking and two slumping, so I'm good now.
Who's your other slumping?
Choosing Kofi Player of the Year.
Sounds a little biased, but
His numbers were better. 22-11 doesn't warrant that. You know what the problem is? He did it for 3 years straight. Johnny Davis comes out of nowhere. Is this sophomore year? It is, right?
No, but yeah, I really like that guy.
Yeah, he's a baller, but he didn't have a better year than Kofi. And they won the Big Ten. So, like, how are you about to sit here and tell me? Whatever, dude.
I feel you.
I'm over it. Obviously.
Sounds like it. For sure. Anyway, we'll get you over to Mark Appel because the interview is awesome. Definitely lock in. Doesn't matter if you're a baseball fan or not. This is good stuff. Good stuff. Shanelli, anything else?
No, I gotta call my dad back.
Anything you want to tell the folks at home? Any slogan?
Slogan. How about stay sparkly, folks?
Today we welcome on another special guest, pitcher with the Philadelphia Phillies, Mark Appel. Mark, what's going on?
What's up, Cole? How you doing? Glad to be here.
Heck yeah. Glad to have you on, man. It's actually a funny story about how we got you on. We both have access to our podcast Twitter. And usually I'm the one who does the Twitter. He does Instagram. And I look on, and I have these weird notifications. And so I go to our profile, and Chanel had got on and retweeted every single one of your tweets in one of the threads you released. Every single one of them. I think there was like 20-something. He retweeted every single one.
I thought that I was on my personal account. Because when I get notifications, I get them from my personal account and for Diamonds in the Rough. So I thought I was on mine. And so – I was going through them, but
I texted him like, dude, what are we doing? And he was like, I thought I was on my own. I was like, dude, you can't even see any content we've posted because we got 25 Mark Appel tweets on here. I was like, can you at least like DM him and see if he'll come on now? We got you some good exposure.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. It must have been every single one of them just must have been a fire tweet, you know?
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
No, they really were. I wanted to hit on that. I guess we can start there.
Yeah.
You got some really good Twitter threads. Do you consider yourself like a professional tweeter at this point?
At this point, no. I think to be a professional, you have to get paid. So
that's true. I don't know. That's a good call.
You know. So
I saw you were racing one of your boys to 500,000. It was a good effort. I mean,
it was a fair effort. You know, he had about a 493,000 follower head start. So I lost, and he's that's actually my boy Sahil Bloom. He kind of left his job in private equity. You know, he's making pretty good money, and just started his own thing. Started writing on Twitter and stuff, and he was kind of the guy that I was like talking to about sharing my thoughts on Twitter and what's that like. Cause I think anytime you have something to say, or you feel like you have something to say, it kind of puts you in a vulnerable spot, cause it opens yourself to criticism, and it opens yourself to, you know, just anyone who reads it can say anything they want on Twitter. And it's kind of a crazy world. And I'm typically a fairly private guy. So, you know, but there are things about me that I want to be public about. And, you know, faith is one, just baseball. I think it's good for the fans. It's good to, good to share a little bit about what life is like, you know, playing minor league baseball. So,
yeah, no, 100%. And I think me and Snell have both kind of got into Twitter like that recently. And I love it, because I think a lot of times people have this perspective on baseball players, like any sport athlete, like we're just like in a different class, like robotic almost. But I mean, we're just humans, like interacting with other fans and stuff. I think it's cool, and they kind of see a side of us they don't get to see a lot. But I remember one of your first Twitter threads that was really, really good, and it was kind of where you're going through a lot of stuff you learned in your career. Came, I think you dropped it around the time where I got hurt. So I had people send it to me a lot, like, and so I was like, yeah, I appreciate it. So I read through all of them, and it was good, really good stuff. If you haven't seen it, check it out for sure. But I just wanted to hit on some of these that you talked about. One of them was, it's your career, you can always say no. How often do you think, especially younger guys and guys that go to college, get really affected by, you know, trying to implement everything that a coach, instructor, someone tells them to do? I mean, it's very easy to do, really.
Yeah, it's easy to get. I think it's easy to get in your head about all sorts of stuff. You know, you're always trying to find that competitive advantage. And, you know, there's the Driveline and Tread, and, you know, all these places are popping up doing a lot of similar things. And I think if you get too many cooks in the kitchen, it can actually not be beneficial for you. So finding a program that works for you, and sticking with it is great. You know, and then there's just a lot of people that'll tell you what you need to do. You know, they're like, you need to go see these people. You need to go talk to this, you know, when you're hurt, go talk to this doctor, go do this rehab program, all that stuff. And it's like being able to have confidence in yourself and what you're doing and what your plan is and what your goals are, can really simplify things and can make, you know, make your yeses be yes and your no's be no, and you don't feel like you're missing out on something. And I think a lot of times we're wandering around feeling like we might miss out on something if we don't say yes, so we have to say yes to everything. And it gives us an opportunity to actually say no. Like for me, I missed out on signing with the Pirates and playing, but I said yes to going back to school for my senior year. Yeah. And so being able to have that confidence and say, you know what, no matter what would have happened the other way, I'm really happy with what I'm doing and how I'm doing it. So I'm going to do that and, you know, not really look back. So,
yeah, it's crazy how many MLB draft experts pop up during those times, isn't it? It's around.
everyone's got, feels like they could be the next GM of whatever team. It's hilarious, but that's part of what makes, like, baseball so great, is because everyone has an opinion, and when people get really into the sport, it makes it pretty fun, especially now with like Twitter, where literally anyone can like tweet out at any player, and that player might read it and might respond. It's like now your voice is actually getting heard by people that are like on the field. It's crazy.
Yeah, for sure. It is a crazy time because you don't know about the draft and like what all goes into it until you go through it. Like it's unbelievable how different it is. And so you have, especially growing up in a hometown, I know Nick can agree, it's like everybody wants what's best for you, obviously, but at the same time, they don't know what they're doing when they're just kind of feeding you information that they don't fully are not fully aware of, you know?
Yeah.
Because you're impressionable. Like you're out of high school, you're 17, 18 years old. And these are people that for me, I've went to church with, they're my teachers, like people I really respect to give me this information. And it's like, okay, I got to start filtering some of this out because these are people I respect telling me stuff. But I don't also don't like, these could sway my decisions at this point. So I really like that one for sure. And another one I liked is you can be content without being complacent.
Yeah.
What do you think the difference is in content, complacent? Obviously you define it here, but in baseball terms, what was there like a specific example you have of why you came up with that?
Yeah. So, you know, when I was in A-ball back in 2014, I was really struggling. And I think I had in my mind this contentment and complacency, like they were the same thing. And so basically saying like the only way I can be like at peace with myself is if I'm not complacent, right? So if I'm just like working my butt off, if I'm going to the field and being the first to show up, the last to leave, I got no excuses, you know, all the cliche, like just run through a brick wall kind of stuff. But I was doing that and the results weren't taking care of themselves. I had some injury stuff that I hadn't yet discovered. And I was like, man, I'm losing velo. I'm losing command. I don't know why. I just keep working harder and harder and harder. And at the end of the day, I'm like, well, I'm not complacent, but I'm also not content. So it's like you can learning how to separate those things was huge for me because I'm like, man, I can be content with today because today is all I got, you know? But that doesn't mean that I have to be complacent. You know, complacency, it has this like laziness that comes with it. So it's like, I can be content with the fact that I'm 30 years old. I've never been to the big leagues. You know, I'm in minor league camp living at a team hotel right now. Right. But I can still show up to the field every day and not be complacent, be hungry for, you know, for more, hungry to get to the big leagues, hungry to, you know, to show up and get my work in and be the best player that I can be. And you know, try to go get my dreams, you know, go get to the big leagues, go have success up there. And so I think it's one of the hardest things, and I'm still learning how to do it. But that was a huge moment for me back in 2014 because I was struggling and I was at like the lowest of lows. I had like a 10 ERA. I didn't even know how to get a guy out. It felt like I was totally lost on the mound. And it was like in this moment that I was just like, you know, and like I said, faith's big for me. So it's like I felt like God was kind of talking to me and teaching me that it's like, hey, I'm going to be able to provide for you. You know, it's like it was almost, I had this man, I'm not going to be happy until I'm in AA. And then, well, once I get to AA, I need to get to AAA and then AAA the big leagues. Well, if I get to the big leagues, I want to stick, you know, and then be an all-star, Cy Young, Hall of Famer. It's like you like living like that. I could have gone 20 years, had a, you know, Hall of Fame career and never been content. And never had peace with who I am and where I'm at. And I just realized that wasn't a good way to live. So
yeah,
I had to make a change.
Yeah. I like that a lot. And
I feel like,
go ahead.
I feel like every team needs to like hire somebody like who's been through something like that. Like, the Rays have, Denard Span, but like somebody who's been through it in some sort of way to be able to give like guidance to young kids, because like coming out of high school for me, I wish somebody would have like been able to tell me that, because Like I went through kind of the same thing too. Like you always want to get to the next level, and you're not like in your play is suffering because you're putting so much pressure on yourself to, okay, I need to get to high A, or like I need to get to double A. And then you like over and over again are putting way too much pressure on yourself instead of just, hey, like take your good ball player, take today and take it one step at a time. And then whatever happens, happens. But like just having somebody who could like sit down and talk to players and answer their questions, like that would be so huge. Cause just listen to you talk, I'm like, yeah, like I've been through all that too. And it would have been nice to figure that out when I was 18 and just signed, rather than having to go through it for the first time last year and when I'm 21 and going through the ringer, you know?
Yeah. And yeah, I have to say, like, experience is still the best teacher. It's undefeated, you know? And so, you know, you like when you're going through it, that's when it like really sticks. Like, I'm pretty sure in college and even early in pro ball, I probably had people tell me that, you know, it's like, I think there were resources. If I'm thinking back, like they were just like, hey, you know, be where you're, you know, kind of be where your feet are and all this stuff. Right. But like, you know, as baseball players, we're competitive. So we're like, man, I'm never going to be like, I'm always going to be hungry for more. I'm always going to be wanting to be better, wanting to be at a higher level, you know, whatever it may be. And there's so much comparison. And so figuring out how to like get your mind off of the future and get your mind solely focused on like today, is, I think, a really hard skill. It's something I still struggle with. But I do it a lot better now than I did, you know, when I was 21, 22, 23 years old. And it's been huge for me, you know, it's been huge just to be able to like show up still, because if I was like, man, I should have been in the big leagues. I was a first overall pick. My career hasn't gone anywhere like, you know, like I thought it would. I should be depressed. I should be, you know, getting drunk every night, trying to drown out the struggles of like just not making it. But here I am, like happy, enjoying my life and working my butt off every day to keep going. It's because I love the game and I enjoy it. And I enjoy the, you know, the clubhouse and the guys, and it's just a special thing. And so it's like, this may be my last year. I don't know. This may be my last spring. I don't know where the Phillies are thinking about using me this year or anything like that. So I'm going to just try to show up every day and like literally drain my battery every single day, knowing that, hey, I'll have a full recharge for the next day. And if I can drain my battery then I'll probably be in a pretty good spot. But there's a lot of stuff you can't control, you know?
Yeah. That's the hardest part, I think, is like being able to understand, like, people will tell you be where your feet are, stuff like that, give you that advice, but you have to learn how to incorporate it into your everyday life and how to use it. Because I feel like hearing it's one thing, but being able to actually do it is another. Like you said, I'm sure somebody told me that as well, but like, no, like there's no, nobody can, like, somebody's way of doing it can be completely different than what works for me. So like them telling me like, this is how I did it, I may go try that and it may not work. So like you said, experience and trying to figure out like, okay, like I need to go through this to find, like, it just, everybody's got their own path. It's just crazy to just like how much different it can be.
And I think, you know, as you keep playing, it's like baseball is a game of failure and we hate failure. And it's just like even reshaping or reshifting that perspective to see failure as like an opportunity to actually learn. So it's like, I'm not trying to fail, but when I do fail, man, that's going to teach me something and I'm going to be better for it. As opposed to like, you know, how I used to be is like, man, when I failed, it's like, there's no purpose for that. You know, there's no reason for that. Like, I'm just, you know, I just got to be better next time or whatever it is. And so like, I think it also keeps you more even keeled, because you're like, man, when you actually know that you're going to fail at some point, It's like when it comes, you're ready for it, and you're able to like use it and bounce back, hopefully a lot faster. You know?
Yeah, and that kind of leads me into the last one, which is my favorite one, and it's something that became really important to me over, I guess, probably in college when I really started to realize it. But you say relationships are everything, and it kind of helps, like you talk about being content and talking about, well, Nick was talking about going to the next level. That's your only goal. I feel like when you fully buy in to building relationships and you start, you know, making friends and you start coming real close to the guys you're playing with, where you're really looking forward to going into the field the next day, it's a lot easier to be content, like where you're at. You know, like me and Nick were both in Charleston and we had a really good locker room, played cards every day, and it was fun. It was legitimately fun to be there. And I feel like that's, I would tell anyone that's the key to minor league baseball, to moving up, is just building those relationships. You know, that's, I mean, because after baseball, that's all you got, you know, that's what you have. You have the people around you, the people you've grown close to, and it makes life a whole lot easier when instead of looking at, okay, I got to move up, I need to play well today, do this, I'm going to go in, I'm going to have a good time with my teammates, I'm going to, you know, do this and that before the game, and then when it's time to compete with guys I enjoy being around.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the quality of your relationships equals the quality of your life. You know, it's like we were made to be in relationship with others. You know, every meaningful like thing in life is through, you know, there needs to be someone else there, right? Whether it's like a you know, a coach player relationship, or like a, you know, teacher student. And then you think about like family relationships, you know, I'm not married, but I'm dating and thinking about it. And so, just like realizing how important that is, like, that's one of the most important relationships you have. And, you know, relationship with your parents. Then when you have kids someday, it's like, just every teammate I have that has a kid is like, man, it changes. Like it's night and day. One day you're not a dad next to your dad and your life's totally different. Right. And so, keeping that in perspective too, it's like, man, at the end of the day, it's like, we could be just baseball players. But the guys that are just baseball players, like, they will burn their relationships so they can accomplish their goals, you know, and get to the big leagues and make the money or whatever reason that they're playing. Right. Whereas the opposite side is like using baseball as a way to create great relationships with your teammates, with fans, you know, with your family, things like that. And I think when you do it that way, it's like, you're actually better prepared to play baseball, you know, every day. Like you have the right mentality. You're showing up with like a full heart, with a clear head and, you know, it's just a really special thing. And relationships, like, by and far, I think the only regrets I have in baseball, is like missing out on big things in my friends' lives, because, you know, we're gone for like 6 or 7 months out of the year, you know?
No doubt.
So.
No doubt. Yeah. No, I love that answer. And I love this Twitter thread. Like I said, go check it out if you haven't seen it. And obviously you had another one that you did recently about kind of the perspective on minor league, and hey, Schnell retweeted every one of them. So
you can definitely I'm kind of curious your guys' thoughts on that. Cause I was like, man, I'm trying to like, you know, put out some potential like solutions to things, but I don't want to just like complain. But
no, I completely agree. And I liked it from the perspective of that it wasn't like a poor, pitiful me, you know, because I think a lot of times that people look at that as, you know, minor leaguers just complaining, you know what you signed up for, this, that, and another. But, like, it's the only path to the major leagues. Like, it's the only way to get there. So it's almost – it's a necessary thing. Like, it's not like an optional thing that we're doing. So
right.
I liked how you kind of added that in where, you know, we're forced to not live at home for – you know, 6-7 months a year, and it'd be nice to be comfortable during those times. And like you said, if there's so many factors that go into on-field play, relationships, circumstances, you know, where your head's at. And if I just feel like a commitment from the team to fully invest into that part of it would make the on-field play so much better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was kind of my whole thesis in writing that was like, hey, this isn't actually just like because the players want better things, or it's like, I actually firmly believe that it actually is a, like, it's an investment that's going to produce the greatest return.
Right.
Even better than, you know, going out and signing free agents or whatever. It's like minor league ball players, like, we play, whether we're getting paid $1,000 a month or $10,000 a month, you know, whatever it is. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like the guys making $10,000 a month have a better opportunity to play well. Because they don't have to worry about where am I going to eat today? Where, you know, can I afford this hotel room tonight? You know, all these things, and just removes a lot of that stress that you can, again, put that focus on your craft and getting better. So it's interesting because, like, the, you know, they're providing housing for us this year. Yeah. You know, some organizations provide free meals, some don't, you know. Phillies have been really solid with that. You know, and then off season is, I think, just a total crapshoot for every single ball player.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, everyone's doing something totally different in the off season. So
that is kind of crazy when you think about it, the off season, how there's really no structure. It's kind of like, hey, roll back into spring training, you better be ready to roll. So it's up to you to figure that out. It's crazy difference in that in college, where everything is like, you're doing this on Thursday, you're doing this on Saturday, and then it's like, all right, go home for 3 months, do what you need to do, and be back ready to roll.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff.
So true.
All right, so let's throw it back to some of your younger days. One thing I didn't know about you is, so you're in high school, you were a relief pitcher. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Our high school, my senior year, we had commits to Stanford, Oregon, Washington, San Jose State, Cal Poly, UC San Diego, all pitchers.
That place. So,
yeah. We had no offense, but I think our team ERA was like a 1 that year, and we were still like 18-8. Like we got shut out so many times. So with that, I played basketball. I showed up to the season a couple of weeks late every year.
Yeah.
And my coach didn't really like that. So it's like, yeah, you're just going to come out of the pen. I'm like, okay. You know, I got a couple starts, my senior year, because we, you know, it was one of those weeks where you just had an extra game, and yeah, one of them I threw a no hitter, and I was like, coach, I think I deserve to start. He's like, but the thing is, everyone else was throwing really well too.
Right.
So it's kind of crazy when you realize, like, I threw 30 innings my senior year of high school, and that was it.
That is nuts. Yeah. And so then you go to Stanford, and I'm sure they're automatically like a starter there, right? Like, they want you to be a starter when you get there.
They wanted me to develop into a starter. You know, even in high school, like, I was kind of a late bloomer. So, you know, I had a lot of raw talent, but it wasn't anything that I could like control. I didn't have a great secondary pitch. So just getting my, you know, developing a slider my freshman year and then developing a changeup my sophomore year. I started a couple games that year and kind of got roughed up, but pitched pretty well out of the pen, and then went into summer ball. And my coach was like, hey, you're going to be a starter next year. So we need you to like get some experience and build up. So I went to the NECBL, New England Collegiate Baseball League, played in Newport, Rhode Island, and started and just learned a changeup that summer. And so I came back with 3 pitches and, you know, ended up being the Friday night guy my sophomore year.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. So at Stanford, we actually had Kyle Peterson on a couple of weeks ago, Is he like a legend around there?
Kyle, yeah, whenever he would come back, you know, he'd always, like, everyone would say what's up. And, yeah, he's a great dude, man.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Yeah, it's fun having some alumni come back and you know, give a pep talk or whatever it would be.
Right. Yeah, I bet. And we've already kind of talked about it, but I want to hit on it more because it's incredible. I'd say there's not very many people who've done this, but – in 2012, you were drafted 8th overall, and you went back to school. Well, yeah. I mean, what was that process like? It had to be like we already hit. I mean, I bet you're hearing stuff from everybody.
Oh yeah, you know, there's obviously everything the fans say, everything. You know, it's like you got so many voices. You know, it's like I got my parents, I got my brother, I got, you know, my girlfriend at the time, I got my agent or advisor, you know, cause you can't really have an agent in college.
No agents.
And then you got the team and you got everyone else just like chirping. And then like I had, you know, I had some people in my life that knew me really well that I trusted for their advice. And like, I tell you what, it was like a 50-50 split. Like 50% of my people were like, hey, you should sign. And 50% were like, if you want to go back to school, you should go back to school. I was like, this is helpful. Like, thanks a lot, guys. Like, I think what it came down to was, there were a few reasons. One was getting my degree before I started. One was, getting another chance to go to Omaha. One was, you know, having an opportunity to like be a leader and be a senior in college. Like just, there's so many things that I think you would never get, I would never have gotten to do again. And then, you know, one thing that seemed to be the only thing that changed was, just like the money, you know, the signing bonus and all that stuff. So, but all of those things combined, like for me, it just made more sense to go back to school. It's like, I was in a pretty comfortable environment. I knew that I could get better. I knew that I had a staff that like wanted to work with me, wanted to like invest in me. And then all the other stuff combined, I was like, man, I didn't think that this was going to happen when I went into the draft that year. But going back, like by the signing deadline, I was like, I'm pretty excited about getting to go back to school.
Yeah, for sure. And I will never ever think that betting on yourself is a bad move. And like you go back, and I like what you said, because I remember saying this out of high school. I was like, listen, if I go to Georgia, I don't think I'm gonna get worse. I know I'm not gonna get worse. Like I'm gonna be a better pitcher when I come out. So, you know, everybody always throws in the injury thing, this, that, and another. But like you take a risk every time you drive a car. You know, and it's not like
absolutely.
That we're ball players, we're not going to go in thinking we're going to get hurt. Like it's, yeah, I'm going to get better and I'm going to make more money. It's,
yeah,
gambling on yourself. I'm on board with for anyone who's down to do that.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy just because, like, I think when you're getting into numbers that big and a signing bonus that big, you're like, I don't really fully comprehend how this is going to change my life.
Yeah,
you know,
no doubt.
It's like, what, like, yeah, sure, maybe I'll buy a car, but whether it's, you know, $200,000, $1 million, or $5 million, you're like, it's all kind of the same. Like, I'm gonna have food, I'm gonna have a place to stay. I'll have, you know, if I want to buy something nice, I can go do that. But, you know, and then as you get older, you're like, oh, okay, I see the difference, you know. Yeah,
that's fun. That's funny, a perspective. I've never thought about that till just now. It was absolutely an easier decision to make then. When you've lived in college, you've lived off $150 a month for two or three years, and you're like, I mean, money's not that big a deal. I can figure this out. Yeah. Like once you live for a little bit, kind of on your own, and kind of understand how money works a little bit, then it's like you look back because. I remember if I was out of high school, if somebody offered me $500,000, I'd be like, no chance, man, get out of here. And it's like,
yeah,
looking back now, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. So
we seem to be a lot riskier and a lot more bold when we're younger, more young and naive, you know. Uh-huh. We're like, oh.
And everybody always like, that's a big decision to be making at 18 years old. It's like, yeah, it was. But also it was like, I'm just going to go to Georgia.
Yeah.
All right, cool. You know, cool. Go ahead. I didn't lose any sleep over it. So,
yeah.
And Nick.
That's awesome.
Nick took the money out of high school. So he went a little different route than us for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing for me, though. Like, I didn't lose sleep over not going to college. Right. It was just one of those things where, like you said, you just make the decision. Like, I don't know what in your brain makes you do it, but like, for like on draft night, I got calls about like whether I wanted to take like a second round deal, but I would have gotten more money, or I could have gone higher. And I mean, I had 3 seconds to decide, and I was just like, just get me off the board as quick as possible. I don't know why I said it, why I didn't say it. Actually, I'll take the extra money. But it's just the decision I made. So
there's definitely a shift in thinking at some point where it's like you're making a decision strictly off baseball when you're that young. And I feel like once you're signing free agent deals and stuff, I would assume it has a lot to do with money, location, stuff like that. I didn't care who drafted me. I didn't care none of that. It was like, all right, let's go. You know, it's time to play ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know when that shift happens, but at some point it does. I guess it's just living life, kind of understanding what it's about.
Yeah. I think we just like lock into the reality that like we don't have any rights, and we're just like, well, we're with the team until they either trade me or cut me. So like, I might as well just like get used to being here. Yeah. It's like just cutting off all your options. And like, you know, it's like, if you're going on dates with girls or whatever, it's like, once you like go steady, you're like, you aren't looking at other girls, you know? It's like, you're just locked in with the one you got.
That's true.
So
that's true. You got your advisor showing you all this, like all these numbers, and you know, you see the dollar values on paper, and it's like, oh yeah, that's a big number. And then all of a sudden it's in your account and you're like, oh shoot. That's mine.
Yeah. When I signed, this is kind of a funny story. If I ever write a book someday, I don't know. This will be in it for sure. But, when I signed with the Astros in 2013, you know, this huge signing bonus. Well, I'm there at the field and they're like going to introduce me. And we signed the papers that day. And then right after I signed, our GM, he just slides over an envelope and I'm like, what's this? And he's like, take a look. And I open it up. It's like my first signing bonus installment check. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm like, I've never seen so many numbers on a piece of paper. And then I'm like, what do I do with this? Like, do I just walk to Bank of America and like put a ATM deposit or something? But it's like, I was there at the game. And then I was literally walking around Minute Maid Park that entire like night, watching the game, being introduced. And I just had it in my jacket pocket. And I'm like, I don't know what to do with this. Like, this is very uncomfortable right now. It was just, I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. It is weird how you don't, like, obviously you make the decision and you kind of base it off numbers and stuff, but they're just numbers to you until it, like you said, you see it. You're like, oh, this is real money. Like, this is, we're not playing Monopoly anymore.
That's right. That's right.
But so obviously, like you mentioned, you get taken number one overall the next year. So excellent gamble on yourself. Where was your first stop after that? Did you go to the rookie ball, or were you short season?
So that year in 2013, I went to short season for 1 week, and then I went to low A for, you know, the rest of the season. But they shut me down after I pitched like 30 innings in low A. So they're like, that's good, and just come back ready to go in 2014.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How different was that than Stanford? Was it like, okay, I'm in a new world here?
Oh, it's so different.
Yeah.
It's like pro ball and college ball are like night and day different. I mean, just the schedule, the time off, it's like, I mean, even just like for me, it's like part of the teammates. It's like teammates in pro ball are way more diverse than Stanford. Like,
yeah,
Stanford's either got guys that are amazing at baseball or just super, super smart.
Right.
And some of both, you know, and you're like, yeah, this is a different place for sure. But it was great. Like just getting to, just getting to be in pro ball and, you know, meet guys from all over the world and become friends with them and kind of share that bond of just loving baseball and playing baseball. It's cool.
If someone was to say, I want you to take me to the like a park that describes minor league baseball, because you played at a lot of different places, where would you take them?
Oh, man. I think one of the parks that just like embodies the minor league spirit is Redding. It's the Double A for the Phillies.
Yeah. The Fightin' Phils.
The Fightin' Phils. The fans love baseball and they show up, especially in the summer when it's nice and warm. And it's just like this super old ballpark. It's, it just got that like feel of like, man, there's some history made here. Like there's been a lot of people that have played here and it's family friendly and super fun. When you get to AAA, it's like some of those ballparks are super nice. And you're like, man, this is like, I can see why AAA is a big jump, because you're getting to the point where you're like knocking on the door to the big leagues. Facilities are way nicer. And there's just a lot. But I think Redding for me like embodies minor league baseball.
That's cool. I like that. Yeah. It's kind of, you know, I think about it, it's like the little towns where like that's their thing, you know, like that team is their thing. So I've always liked the parks like that. And Charleston was a big city, but it was kind of, they have no professional sports, you know? And so we were like their team. It was awesome. I mean, we got 6,000-7,000 every night. It was really, really cool.
That's legit.
Yeah, no, it was
Thirsty Thursdays.
Yeah, it was cool.
Thirsty Thursdays.
We had a good time there.
Yeah, it was great.
So when was the first injury that you had? What year was that?
Yeah, I was probably battling something that progressively got worse, but probably starting in 2014, I made it through 14 and 15, surprisingly, without going on the DL or IL. And then 2016 was my first surgery. I should go back. I had an appendectomy in 2014 that I do think like played a pretty big role in some of the other issues that I had. But that wasn't like a on-field injury in itself. But yeah, so 2016 I had shoulder surgery, and then 2018, kind of after I had stepped away for a little bit, I had a shoulder surgery. Did I say 16? I had elbow surgery.
Okay. So. And so was it kind of one of those things where it is kind of snowballed? It's like one thing happens and something else happens.
Yeah.
Like what, is there anything you could go back and like do differently in terms of?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I mean, just in terms of staying healthy and stuff like that.
Or just like mentally, you know, because I think that's the biggest part of being injured for me at this point. Seeing like, you've got to find other things to do, because if you're constantly just like going to the field, coming home, thinking about this, like, oh, I kind of feel something here, and this kind of feels weird. Like it just wears on you, and it just wears you out.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah. 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 When like, your body isn't good. I think your body and your mind are really connected. It's like poor health can lead to anxiety and all sorts of other issues. And so like being able to find an outlet for that would be huge. I struggled because I didn't really know why I was playing so poorly until I ended up having surgery. And so that was almost like a relief for me. And I was like, all right, now I can just like focus on getting better. But that was because, I mean, part of it was like, I wasn't enjoying playing because I was getting hit around the park, walking guys. It's like, it wasn't fun for me at that point. And so it's like having surgery would almost felt like a relief for me. But there's so many things that like, if I knew everyone says this, if I knew what I know now back then, then I would have done this differently. But I don't like thinking that way because, you know, it's like, you didn't know what you knew now. Yeah. It's like, and the only reason you know what you know now is because you went through what you went through. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like this catch 22, but, yeah, I mean, if I knew everything I know now, I would have done things differently, but I have no regrets about anything that I did or how I went about my business. I just think I had a bunch of missing pieces. Yeah. It took me a while to figure out what those missing pieces were.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're like the mental game away from the field when you're like rehabbing and all that stuff. Is tough. And I would probably say I wish I found a couple hobbies. I wish I read more. I wish I did things that were like actually moving my life forward, regardless of my circumstance, you know?
Yeah.
It's like you can read when you're hurt or when you're healthy, you know? And then I think writing too. It's like whether you're writing, you know, and sharing that with other people or just writing for yourself. I think there's something about writing that when you have all these thoughts in your head, whether it's something you read or something that sparked a curiosity, like putting pen to paper can help you like organize those thoughts and make sense of what you're experiencing or what you're feeling or what you're thinking. So I wish I did that a lot more. Cause I think getting it on paper, it's like, that means you can get it out of your head.
Yeah.
And you know, you got it somewhere, but, it's not up here while you're trying to do work, you know?
Right. And I think an underrated part of getting hurt is as athletes and as competitors, I think we at some point kind of feel invincible, especially if you haven't experienced that up to that point, like getting hurt, you just feel like your body is peak performance. Like you feel like you're above that. And when, like, for me, this was the first time I've been hurt. It was like, okay, obviously this can happen to me and I don't want it to happen again. So what I need to do when honestly, like, you can do everything right, and as a pitcher, you can still get hurt. Like, it's just part of it.
Yeah.
And so like you said, just getting those thoughts out, getting stuff like that out where you can just focus on getting better and trying to enjoy while you're going through it is a big deal, because like, as I don't want to say it's embarrassing, but it is to an extent. Like, people texting you like, hey, what happened, man? You good? And it's like, I don't know. Like, I want to get checked out tomorrow. Who knows?
Yeah.
You don't want to send those texts, but at the same time, there's nothing you can do. I mean,
right.
So that's something I've learned for sure. And obviously I know you went through the same thing, and I wanted to hit on, you know, it had to be tough to step away from the game for a little while. Like, that had to be one of the toughest decisions you ever made.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I think in most decisions, like once I have peace about it, it's like, it's an easy decision, but
yeah,
sometimes it's a process to get to that point. I think I was battling with that most of 2017, especially after I got hurt again. My shoulder was bothering me. I was like, man, I'm checking off every box in rehab. And then as soon as I go start throwing again, it just keeps hurting. So I'm like, what the heck, what is going on? Mm-hmm. And I think I got to a point where I was like, man, I'm pretty drained. Like, obviously physically I'm not healthy. I'm drained mentally and emotionally and, you know, and spiritually, just like feeling pretty dry. And I was like, I kind of over that like Christmas season of 2017, I was like, man, I think I just need to be home. I need to, like, I feel refreshed when I'm around my family. I feel like there's, you know, hope. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, you know, just being steady in a place, and knowing that, like, hey, your family loves you whether you play well or not. And so that was huge for me. And getting to that point was like, okay, what would that look like now if I left? It was like, I left knowing that I'm, you know, the Phillies or whoever else might not ever take me back.
Yeah.
Right. So I left knowing I might have pitched my last pitch. And I also knew that, like, that I might have an opportunity, partly because I was a top pick and, you know, just also because it doesn't really cost that much to keep a minor leaguer on your books for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So once I had peace about that, it was an easy decision. And I called the Phillies and let them know, hey, I'm not coming down to spring training. And they were super understanding and, you know, said, anytime you want to come back, let us know.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. I read some of the stuff you did and you talk about it, where, you know, you go on some trips, go kayaking, do some hiking and stuff like that. And like, yeah. But at the end of all that, like, how excited were you when you made the decision to come back and you have really had something to look forward to, train again? You kind of start feeling like yourself again once all that stuff kicked in?
Yeah. Yeah. So I literally didn't pick up a baseball for, I think it was like 18 months almost.
Yeah.
And so 9 of those months were like living as if I'd never played baseball again. And like, it was awesome. Like, I'm not like, I struggle to say that, 'cause I know a lot of people like playing baseball, they love it, but they're like in a tough place, mm-hmm. you know, whether they're like just like hurt or just like not playing well.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, taking a break might be the thing. But I know that not everyone has the luxury to take a break and be able to come back if that's what they want to do. And so, but the fact that I was able to do that and like go travel and just like be a normal person for the first time in my life, like, oh, it was like wonderful. Like, some of the best times of my life, just because no one cared about what I was doing every day and how I was performing and whether I was going to make it to the big leagues or not. I was just Mark, you know?
Yeah.
And that was huge.
Yeah. So, I mean, how you feeling now? You feeling good? Body feeling good?
Feeling pretty good. You know, my shoulder still gives me issues every now and then, but I've learned how to manage it, and I've learned how to, you know, just do the things I need to do to prepare every day. So it just takes me a little bit more time to get ready and, you know, need to just stay on top of it. But beyond that, it's like I feel healthy. I feel excited. I feel like I'm ready to go. And I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity this season, especially with the lockout. And mm-hmm. who knows, there's might be making that agreement today, yeah. Or, you know, 3 months from now. Like, who knows?
Who knows? Who knows?
So,
it's all crazy.
I wanted to kind of go back on something you said earlier where you were talking about you don't like to say, you know, if I knew I'd know them, because you learn that stuff as you go through and you kind of overcome those challenges and look back and learn from them and stuff. And I was actually reading last night in the book of Hebrews. It was talking about how if we lived a perfect life, like, it wouldn't be that rewarding. And when you go through those challenges, like, how rewarding it is when you can kind of see through the other side. How rewarding will it be when you do make the Phillies roster? Like, it had to be like 5 times more rewarding than it would have been if you did it when you were 25 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. Big time. I mean, it's sometimes hard for me to imagine that day. You know, like, I don't even know what my emotional state would be, but it would be special. you know, it'd be real special. Something I've been thinking a lot about lately has just been like kind of random, but it's like pain and suffering and something that everyone experiences at some point in our lives. And you know, it's like I think in 21st American culture, we're like, man, we shouldn't live like that difficult of lives. Like if we're living a difficult life, or if there's like pain or suffering in our lives for some reason, then like something's off. And you look at, you know, for me with my faith, like you look at Jesus, it was like Jesus suffered more than almost any man, you know, that ever walked the face of the earth. And he lived a perfect life, right? And So it's like for us to think that we are going to be free from suffering because we, you know, live a certain way or believe a certain thing or do everything the right way is almost foolishness. I think the Bible would call that foolishness. Like wisdom is knowing that like suffering comes. The question is, what do you do when suffering comes? And it's just something I've been thinking a lot about lately. And, you know, for me, like, I know the answer is like to be with God. Like you see the Psalms, like David was suffering. He was running from people that were trying to kill him, and he would cry out to God to save him. And then he would remind himself, like, in, as he's praying to God, like, God is his stronghold, like his safe place, his fortress, you know, against the enemy. And so it's like, man, we want to be protected. We go to God. But for us to think that like we can just go through life without suffering, it's like, that's not a life that I want to live. Now I'm not seeking out suffering and like trying to be this, like, you know, oh, I have to live in poverty and I have to do all these things, you know, to show how, you know, like just how like holy I am or how good I am that I can endure this suffering. It's like, I don't think that's it, but we try to live without suffering, but we know that suffering will come at some point. Whether that's injury, whether that's, you know, sometimes that's you making a mistake. It's you doing the wrong thing and you suffering the consequences, right? Sometimes it's someone else betraying you, stabbing you in the back, you know? Sometimes it's just like losing a family member or a friend or just something that comes with the natural way of life. And then sometimes it's just like so mysterious that you're like, there's no explanation for this, you know?
Yeah.
And all of those, I think all of those types of suffering come in our lives at some point.
Yeah.
But I think it's what makes life so special. It's like being able to grow and learn and build your character through those moments. And it makes things worthwhile, like you're saying, like just the fact that when I get to the big leagues, I'm getting to the big leagues as a 30 or 31 year old guy, you know, who went through a lot, struggled through a lot, had to freaking leave the game because I was so beat up, you know?
Yeah.
And then having the opportunity to come back and have a second chance at it, it's special.
Heck yeah. Yeah, you mentioned writing a book. I think you should, for sure. I think you got enough thoughts for it, for sure. But listen, man, we're pulling for you on this pod, for sure. Anytime you want to come back on. And best of luck to you this year. Stay healthy and keep driving. We're pulling for you.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it, guys. Same to you. Hopefully I'll see you guys down the road. Maybe we'll have to grab a meal while we're both down here in Florida.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate it, man. Have a good rest of your day and keep chucking it.
You too, guys. See you.
See you, man.
Peace.